the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to a wintry Monday edition of The Drive. What a difference. I wore shorts yesterday.
Did you mean to say freeze warning?
We're not doing that anymore.
We're not going to use that. There is one tonight, by the way, just officially from the weather, you know, from the weather side. Yeah, it's going to be as cold as it is now. Temperature's going to drop about at least 15 more degrees before the night is over. So yes, anything. Now I'll say if the wind keeps blowing, you don't have to worry as much about like pipes, things like that.
Yeah,
but pets.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely get them inside.
Pets and plants, right?
If you haven't got plants inside by now,
it's too late.
They're probably in big trouble.
Those lemons aren't going to.
Big trouble.
They're not going to make it.
Man, it is cold out there. That wind just cut right through you. But yeah, it's a good looking day when you're sitting inside, looking outside at the, you know, trees blowing by occasionally. But no.
Did you get covered in leaves this weekend too? The city was just absolutely
My pool. Oh, man, what a mess.
It was a pool.
Well, yeah, it is.
Now it's a big pile of leaves.
That's pretty much what it looks like. All right, welcome in. It's the Monday Drive. I'm Bill. That's Dan. You heard Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew is at the controls. We're here for what's going to be a little bit shorter edition of the Drive because women's basketball is coming up tonight. And that's a tip at 6, so we have to be out in time for the pregame. But we've got plenty of time to hear from you. We'll give you our thoughts because there is a lot to talk about. Auburn loses again, and that's tough. But what a different kind of game. Unbelievable offensive shootout. If you had told me that the over-under was 45, I might have thought that's about right. Not that it would take 45 points to win the game. I mean, well, it did. In fact, in overtime, 45-38 Vandy.
Just a super impressive performance by an Auburn offense that had been stagnant for the season so far, especially in conference play.
Absolutely.
The Auburn offense had been near the bottom of the league, and it was a big reason why Auburn made a coaching change this week. And if you'd asked me on Saturday morning, I'd have said, you know what? A big problem this season with the play calling is that you seem limited at quarterback, and what can you do with a situation like that? And then you watch the game against Vanderbilt, and it's like, no, it's even worse than that.
Yes,
because
it is.
You had quarterbacks, and at least one in Ashton Daniels, capable of making enough plays to keep you in a game. And I thought Hugh Freeze was always talking about critical moments with Jackson. I thought what Ashton was able to do, I mean, first of all, credit to Derek Nix and that entire offense for bringing it.
You can't undersell how impressive the job Derek Nix and the offensive staff did.
Yeah, I mean, to go out there and gain
560 yards plus, and we were talking a little beforehand, Dan, it's just the second time in Auburn history that they've had over 300 yards passing and over 200 yards rushing against a ranked team. Second time in Auburn history they've done that.
I mean, first time in years they've had that many yards in conference, and I think when Bo Nix did it, it wasn't against a very good team in the Malzahn era. And how about this? When Ashton Daniels had third and long, like when it was big moments back against the wall, the moments where it felt like, hey, this is going to start to slip away, and you're going to start to see what you've seen all season. No, that's when he was seemingly at his sharpest. And yeah, there were some miscues too, but it was the best game by an Auburn quarterback in years. And I don't know if anybody, especially after Kentucky, right? Like, I don't know if anybody thought that was seriously about
3 points at home against Kentucky. What are you expecting to get against a much better team on the road?
And it just week. Yeah, I mean, they look like a different team, and with a lot of the same personnel and a different play caller, they look like a different team, which is a searing indictment, right, of Hugh Freeze as a strategist and what he was doing, because I mean, the moment you make a change to see improvement that drastic with somebody else calling the plays is it was jarring, and it was almost enough to get the win against Vanderbilt. But yeah, what a game by the Auburn offense.
I thought it was tremendous. Ashton Daniels was at 442 yards of total offense.
Mm-hmm.
That is the third best single game in Auburn history. Can y'all name the top two?
Damian.
Yep. Independence Bowl against Army. That's number two.
I'm thinking Nick Marshall Iron Bowl.
Marshall against Alabama.
That's one, too. Yep. Cam had a couple up there. He had a couple, I think, where he made 405 yards twice, but never got quite that high.
So, yeah, I mean, because, again, Ashton showed that ability as a runner as well. I mean, just he seemed to feel the pressure better. He was cool. I thought he
looked
was
natural back there. Like he really been running this offense for years.
He looked very comfortable back there, which was amazing.
Do you come away from that game thinking the plan should be? And I know this came up when DJ Durkin spoke to the media today. I mean, if you play Ashton Daniels against Mercer and Alabama, it's the end of his college football career. That would be five games this year. Right. He's a senior. That would be the end of it. If you sat him against Mercer and played him against the Iron Bowl, he would have another year of eligibility. No obligation to return to Auburn necessarily.
Right.
I mean, he would be a guy who's transfer portal eligible, but with a maybe a new coaching staff coming to Auburn. Who knows? You know, that's a lot of question marks about the future. I kind of think that Ashton Daniels in showing up and playing the way he did on Saturday, and in general, like if he. Like, I don't know if you want to set precedents as far as letting guys sit out for eligibility reasons or things like that. This is an instance where, I don't know. Like,
you could actually get an opportunity to have a really good idea about possibilities for next year if Ashton didn't play and Deuce did.
And you get an extra, you get an extended
because
look.
Extended look at Deuce. I would leave it. I would think it'll be up to Ashton to decide.
And
does he want to play?
And the plan that before this was for him to redshirt. So that already tells me that he was thinking that anyway. To me, this would be a no-brainer. I would absolutely not play him against Mercer, and I would make him the number one guy going into next year. I would do what I can to keep him here and try to make him Auburn starting quarterback next year.
The financial considerations are real, too, for a quarterback playing another year of college football. Like, if that's the thing where if he wants to do it, it would be – yeah, I think that it's whether it's leave it up to him or, however they want to phrase it. I do think that there's – like after seeing what he had on Saturday, and he was sharp enough in the second half of the Arkansas game that it's like –
he was like 7 of 8.
That's what I mean. He was sharp enough in the second half of the Arkansas game. Kentucky is the big aberration.
Didn't have any receivers more than 3 yards downfield.
That's what I mean. That's
amazing. Who knew that Cam Coleman –
send receivers a few yards – send them past the first down marker.
Yeah,
spread them out a little bit so that – the other thing is I thought it was very smart to – to have them spread out, have the receivers spread out, which if play broke down, it gave a little more room for Ashton Daniels to run than it seemed when Auburn had everybody bunched in.
Yeah, and the tempo made a difference too. I don't think Vanderbilt prepared for that, and I thought it made a real difference for Auburn offensively and really caught them off guard and allowed them to get that momentum going. But I think Derek Nix and his staff deserve all the credit. This is a referendum on how bad of a job Hugh Freeze did running this offense from top to bottom, planning, executing, taking care of the details, holding players and other coaches accountable. This is a referendum that was a 0 out of 10, a complete F failure on his part.
Please make sure when you call the show, call 334-321-1390 and not Bill's
not
private line to get your takes in. Thankfully, Spectre called the drive hotline presented by Skybar, and so we're going to get to him real quickly here in the first segment. What's up, buddy?
How one game makes a difference, isn't it? What were we talking about Friday?
Offensive line. Did the offensive line look a whole lot better?
I'll tell you what. That's what it should have been looking like all year long.
Well, maybe that tells you that play calling and scheme has a little something to do with it.
And fitting what you're asking the offense to do to what your quarterback is good at. is something that we've wondered about all season, rather than having kind of a rigid, hey, this is what the offense does no matter what, and the quarterback is expected to do it. Felt like you had something that, and you remember Derek Nix is a Kiffin disciple? Right? Like
you saw more. He's been with Lane for quite a while.
I think you saw an offense that was more flexible and more built to what Ashton Daniels can actually do. And you saw some more tempo. I think you saw the offensive line play a little less finesse, a little bit more.
Yeah, I thought Mason Murphy was fine there at center. I thought the offensive line. But yes, I think part of it is just confidence in what they're doing.
Well, thank you, Dan. You said everything I was going
to
say.
And to me, Spectre, like the number one guy there. I mean, Ashton Daniels is a gamer and deserves a ton of credit. Derek Nix is the guy who, and again, it's an overtime loss. Like you want to keep it in perspective. Yeah. But from what you saw from that offense in a guy making his debut as the play caller, like to me, that was. I mean, I don't know what you could have asked. Could you have realistically asked for more? Out of Derek Nix on Saturday, especially in light of what you'd seen previously.
Yeah, I want to see more. I want to see more from Derek Nix now.
More.
Yeah.
Ditto.
No, good stuff, Spectre. And give Spectre credit. He's been lamenting the lack of tempo, and I think that was something that you saw. You saw Derek Nix lean on a lot more. Yeah. I think it helps when you go forward on first down. But like,
yeah, but Auburn converted on that first drive, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 19, mm-hmm. 3rd and 8. I mean, it was something to see.
How about that 3rd and 19? Was it the check at the line of scrimmage?
Yeah,
seemingly to the Malcolm screen.
Yeah,
and you saw a couple of offensive linemen moving to make that play happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
well,
it looked
I
like a different
say,
team.
I will. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
I will say a few words if I can get one in. Personnel change was a big issue. We made that personnel change. The fact that I've been hollering tempo all year long, isn't that right?
Yes, indeed.
And execution. Now, you're telling me that this head coach, Hugh Freeze, kept this offensive line from executing running tempo and the correct personnel change?
I think we are.
I think part of the problem was they're running plays where they hadn't practiced. An offensive line is about execution and practicing.
Yeah, how about that story coming out over the weekend? The idea that Hugh Freeze, I don't know who originally had this, Spectre, but the story.
Justin Hokus has been talking about it for more than a year.
The thought that Hugh Freeze at times during the game would apparently call plays that hadn't been practiced or installed. That's probably not going to help things from an offensive, from a rhythm standpoint. With your quarterback, but no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, seeing
that goes back to last year. Was it last year, year before, when Peyton Thorne said no? That wasn't. Remember when he said no? Oh, that wasn't what happened.
Yeah,
you think?
Go ahead.
Everybody leave his quarterback. You think everybody leave his quarterbacks alone now?
I think Ashton Daniels showed you that he's capable of a lot more than what you'd seen to this point in the season, and it does raise the point of like, wow, that's did the anchor come off suddenly this past week?
Look at our passing yards, 353.
Mm-hmm.
Look at our rushing yards, 219. I mean, 210 maybe.
Hey, Auburn had more yards in the first half than they'd had in I think four of their five previous conference games.
And how about the willingness to take shots downfield that was gone? Mm-hmm. I mean, Auburn. I think Auburn's only downfield attempt against Kentucky was the Hail Mary into the end zone at the end. Maybe there was one other one, but it's like. You can't be a 10 yards and in offense, Spectre, even if you're really good at running the ball, right? A defense knows that that's what you're going to do. They'll keep everything in front of them, and they'll hold you to very limited yardage. If you can take the top off, and Auburn did that a couple of times, if you can go downfield, suddenly you got to cover a lot more yardage, and it's a lot easier to find that spacing. Auburn did that really well on Saturday. I don't think there's been a game this year where you said Auburn's done that well.
Sure. What you got?
Dan, I got one last question before I let you guys go. Now, I don't expect the offense to change over the next two games. I expect them to keep up this tempo and execution. Now, what in the world, if we're giving credit to Nix and Thornton, nobody's mentioning Thornton, but if we're giving those two coaches credit, what in the world happened to our defense?
I think I think the simplest answer I had, I heard some talk about it earlier today, that and I think part of it is that DJ Durkin couldn't spend as much time with the game plan and in preparation.
That's part of it.
That's part of it. But I think an even larger part, think a huge part, is the fact that during the ball game, DJ Durkin, if you watched the sidelines this year, when the defense would come off the field, DJ Durkin would go over and spend time with his defenders and be able to go over what's going on, what kind of adjustments they need to make. And he couldn't, you can't do that when you're the head coach, because he has to be watching the offense. So in 4 days, I don't know that in 4 days you can really come up with a solution to that, but they've got time now to try to determine who's going to be able to do that or how he can get information to the defenders, because I think the fact that they couldn't adjust because they didn't have the guy who's usually telling them what to do there was a huge factor. I think that directly would have you know, held Vandy a couple of scores less.
Well, they had 136 yards, I think it was, in a field goal in their first three drives.
Right.
And then at the end of the first half,
they went up tempo.
They decided to go tempo. They decided to spread it out and do what they did at the end of the Texas game when they came back in the fourth quarter there and made it a little bit tighter than it should have been.
And the first portion of it was in 2 minutes at the end of the first half.
Right.
So you don't assume that that's what they're going to do in the second half. But when they did, I think that prevented Auburn from being able to adjust, because, I mean, I guess DJ Durkin could have just left his duties as head coach for a little while to do it, but that'd be tough to do.
So they did that, and they scored four or five touchdowns on the first five possessions of the second half after scoring right there at the end of the first half, and Auburn was unable to adjust it. I think part of that's Durkin. I think part of it is Pavia, and Vanderbilt's pretty good.
Oh, absolutely.
Can I raise the point?
And one
that,
more thing.
What is it?
I think Auburn is a little short on cover guys.
That's
secondary,
exactly right.
Especially when Champ Anthony is out.
At time it looked like Baylor, and I'll point out too, Vandy and Baylor are like the only two games this year that felt like shootouts between Auburn and the opponent. I think there have been some other games this year where Auburn's opponents may have wanted to test Auburn through the air, but you think, hey, Auburn's not even going to score 10 points offensively.
Right.
Like, how many chances do you really need to take? Vanderbilt needed to take more chances than most of Auburn's opponents of late, and I think that maybe showed that Auburn is a little bit short when it comes to coverage up the middle, and that's something that could be a problem when you play Alabama.
Absolutely,
it is. Because Ty Simpson's one of the best at throwing over the middle in college football, and, Auburn's got a couple of weeks to try to figure that out before they play. I mean, maybe the two best quarterbacks they see this season are the last two they see in conference play, Diego Pavi on Saturday and Ty Simpson.
Mercer, by the way, has been
Mercer's pretty
piling
good.
Up. Mercer's like on an eight or nine game winning streak right now, and they're just pouring on the yards and points.
They are. I will also say this. I think Auburn's got some guys like Blake Woodby, a freshman.
Donovan Starr.
Donovan Starr, another freshman, that maybe they've been reluctant to play in these bigger games. They're putting out guys that are more safeties and not great in man coverage. And I just think that's a shift they need to make. They need to get cover guys out there in
these
situations.
They've got some time now to get it done. Appreciate the call, Spector. Great stuff. 334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break. Right back with more of your phone calls.
Short show today.
Yep.
Too.
We're here until about 5:35, 5:40 because of women's basketball. So come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
War Eagle. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, and let's get to The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar and Napoleon. Is up next. Hey, Napoleon.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. I hope y'all are doing all right. I'm sorry, but I have to mention a certain caller that kept calling in about how the offensive line had absolutely no talent whatsoever and couldn't block anybody ever. And seemed like that offensive line could block people when certain individuals were out of the way.
Oh, I agree. I mean, they weren't perfect by any means, right? They had some tough penalties
again. Oh, yeah.
Both tackles had a pair of
false starts.
I thought, you know, to me, the big problem with the offensive line a year ago, I thought that if you were going to try to throw it as much as you did with Thorne, like you were going to need an offensive line that was great at pass blocking, and Auburn didn't necessarily have that this year. I think famously, I've been more suspicious of the quarterback and the play calling than anything else this year. Sort of, you know, seeing, and we wondered if Hugh Freeze could do that, right? A couple of weeks ago, Bill, when we asked Hugh Freeze, hey, what's different when you go from Jackson Arnold to Ashton Daniels?
And he said nothing.
It's like, well, that's maybe a red flag, right? Because shouldn't you be adjusting the offense to, and you know, and
it
maybe
a lot different
that just
to
says
me.
A lot about him, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe, yeah, I don't want to be unfair, but it's like that.
You're not being unfair.
Like that, I mean, it feels like on Saturday you saw a very different offense and an offense tailored to what Ashton Daniels does really well. Right, I mean, and I thought that, you know, whether that's take more deep shots, whether that's, I sort of like the way they used him in the run game. Nearly had a 50-yard touchdown run for Ashton. Like,
even when they weren't going just pure tempo, I mean, everything just seemed like it was just better in rhythm. And I really, again, like I said a while ago, I like the way they sort of spread the field a little bit, made it easier, it felt like, for receivers to be able to get into open spaces, and they did. That's something else. We had people going, well, Marcus Davis can't coach. These guys never are open. They were open. They were open it's all amazing. Over the field. Yeah, and also
– those wide receivers have been open all season.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
they've been wide open all season.
Oh, well, it's also good when you go ahead and trust a Cam Coleman who I have never seen a player make a right-handed one-handed catch and a left-handed one-handed catch back to back.
Cam Coleman is, I mean, they're for the most part the rule that says you need to play 3 years before you're ready for the NFL draft. Like for the most part, that rule is correct. But every once in a while, you see a guy who's ready after 1 or 2 years of college. Like, look, Cam Coleman would be a top 10, top 15 pick. Like,
he's going to abuse the corners next year.
Next, yeah.
Wherever he's
and I think
it's going to be ugly.
I think it's fair to ask when you're interviewing head coaches, I think what's your plan to keep Cam Coleman is a fair question
to a
head coach. Like, I think that's, and I, you
it's
better,
a great
and, if,
question.
And if you're interviewing for Auburn's job, you better have an answer to that question because.
Absolutely.
Agreed. If you got Ashton Daniels coming back, you say we're going to do exactly what we did. We're going to target you a dozen times every game.
But all right, guys, I just wanted to make sure that I stated that there is actually some talent on that offensive line.
Yes, there is.
It is not that bad, and somebody has been calling in every week or every day saying they're terrible. They're terrible. They're terrible. They're not that terrible. Is all I'm saying. They're not great. But they're not that terrible. Y'all have a great night.
Appreciate it, Napoleon.
And Ashton Daniels, you know, the amount of time he had to throw was.
Oh, man, there were sometimes he'd take it and look.
Yeah, it was.
He had a lot of time.
Here's the thing. I think people would be surprised by how much time Auburn's quarterbacks have had in other games this year. Ashton Daniels didn't need as much time, and he got rid of the ball quickly. Like, I think Ashton Daniels' time with the ball was shorter than you'd seen in previous games because he was getting rid of it. He was putting it downfield and a different night and day from what you'd seen against Kentucky just about a week earlier.
334-321-1390. Was it Heath? Yes. Hey, Heath.
Hey guys, how y'all doing today?
Hey, bud.
Hey, a couple things. I want to address the elephant in the room. But I tell you what, guys, I was with a group of different football fans this weekend, and before it was over with, Florida fans, LSU fans, Alabama fans, and it's hard to say that, but he's a close friend. We're all cheering for Auburn towards the end of that game, and it made my heart feel good. Getting text messages from people telling me that Auburn looks scary good all of a sudden. And that leads me to this question. And, Brian, this is more towards you because I already called in last week talking to the coaches with the guys. What are your thoughts as far as the head coach? I see it one way. If we don't figure out a way to retain DJ Durkin, somebody's going to pick him up as a head coach. because of what he was able to accomplish in 6 short days. I mean, we had the talent. We had the ability to do what we've done. Auburn retains him as a head coach. That's going to allow them to put together a contract that's not over the top, that would have a decent buyout. Let's say that we crap the bed. And I think he would be able to retain a lot of the talent we had, because just listening to the players, the heartbeat that he gave to the team is something that's been lacking all season. And I just want you guys' thoughts on that. I mean, I know Dan, you said last week that you just want a complete turn the page situation. Well,
I'd be open to a Durkin return as DC if both sides were it. I'm a little less inclined. Like I don't know. I'm not totally against keeping DJ Durkin as the head coach, especially like, you know, seeing what happened in his first game, and you know, want to see how the season goes out before you make a proclamation. And would certainly be open to his return, you know, of both sides. I don't know if it needs to be a prerequisite for, you know, the coaches you're interviewing and saying, well, you have to keep DJ Durkin I'd be open to it.
I don't think anyone would want that. I don't think they would want to feel as if they could come into a team and who would want to be told, look, you pick your hand of the reins as Auburn Tigers, but you have to do it my way. And nobody wants to do that. But it would be the most Auburn thing for Auburn to do, would be to win out, win the Iron Bowl, take us to a bowl game, and not retain the man that got us there.
Well,
that would be the most Auburn thing for Auburn to do, if we have been known to do that for decades.
Well, I do think that Durkin is a viable candidate. I think Durkin is a definite candidate, like a real candidate. I don't think it's just a name that people are throwing out there. I think he has support among at least one or two people who have opinions that matter among the Auburn supporters and boosters.
And I get the sense the players would go to bat for him too, in a way that you maybe didn't have with Cadillac keeping the job or Kevin Steele in 2020, where it's like you had internal options in previous years that you could have gone to. I think that it's getting more interesting as far as the possibility of keeping him. But I don't know, Brian. Yeah, Brian, what do you think about DJ's candidacy?
Well, I think it's real, and I think he does have a shot. And I do think if he's not hired as the head coach, and I don't know that Auburn's going to do this, but I think they should 100% do whatever it takes to try to retain him if the head coach wants him. And if that means making him the highest paid defense coordinator in the country or close to it, I think Auburn should do that. I think he's worth it. The way this defense plays for him, the way these players support him, tells me all I need to know about him as a coach. So I'm not saying that I would necessarily hire him as the head coach, but I would certainly do everything in my power to keep him here on that side of the ball, if the head coach would like to do that.
I definitely don't think he hurt his candidacy Saturday. I don't think it was a block, you know, that he's got to be the head coach after that. But I think
– And if you told me, if you told me Auburn was going to lose – giving up 45 points, I'd have said, ooh, that's probably going to hurt DJ Durkin's candidacy some. I don't know how much game actually hurt.
It bothers me, but I don't put a lot of the blame on DJ Durkin for that, because like I said, he couldn't do two things at the same time. I think he has shown a lot of the attributes that you want in a head coach. I think he handles himself very well. I think his players definitely respect him. I think he's a legit candidate. Now, I said today earlier on Doug's show, I still think it's too early to just feel like you got to make that move right now, though. He was like, do you feel like you need to make the move now? No, I want to wait. I've got to see what happens from this point on, but I think he is very much a legitimate candidate.
Yeah, thank you for your call. One more thing. I know it was a go to Coleman for the overtime tie. They had Singleton one-on-one in soft zone at the bottom of the screen from the angle I was watching it at. And I know he flipped and went straight to Coleman, and the man's a machine. He's going to probably go down in history as one of the best if he stays healthy. But, I mean, it's just, golly, you know, we had it so close.
Yep.
But that's just how our season's been all year.
You're right.
I mean, in the regulation, they just need to complete one more, you know what, 12-yard pass, 15-yard pass, and have a legit shot at a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have an option. You know, we got the guy. I, 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 not The kicker that can supposedly boot at 60 yards. I mean, I know with a couple seconds we run the risk of them blocking the kick, running it back, this and that and the other. But I know that they would have lost that game. They would have regretted not kicking the field goal. But I realize we're at midfield. But just line up and kick the crap out of it. Just see where it lands. You know, see if we get the field goal to go ahead for the game.
Yeah. I think Auburn was at the 43-yard line.
Yeah, it would have been a 61-yarder, probably.
Hey, they're doing it in the NFL. I know we don't have the NFL talent kicker, but they're doing it these days. And as like I said, things happen, you know.
And then, of course,
hey, guys, thank y'all so much for taking my call.
Appreciate it. Really good here, brother.
Of course, Vandy passed on what would have been, what, about 40?
Oh, yeah. 40, it was a 44, 45, something like that.
Yeah, interesting call there.
Yep, but that's what he was talking about. They would have probably really – been critical if they had lost that ball game after passing up that field goal.
I bet in the book when it says you're at that yard line and there's that much time left, the book probably tells you 100% of the time you should go for it, especially when you're averaging 8 or 9 yards per carry.
Two incompletions before the Hail Mary were kind of the missed opportunity to make that a more manageable field goal too, because you go incomplete to Preston, I think, on one of them, and then they tried to go downfield to Cam. Right, but it's like you have a couple of opportunities to make it a more manageable field goal, and look, little Mac kicked a good looking one, you know, with some distance on it earlier in that game. So I mean, you thought like if you get this thing to 50, you know, maybe he's feeling it. But yeah, just not to be. I do not think kick. I mean, look, you never know. Maybe Connor Gibbs, you know, had his Wheaties, right, and he's ready to go kick a 60-yarder to win the game that night. I probably think Hail Mary to Cam or Perry is probably a better opportunity at midfield in that situation than a 60-yard field goal. Like I didn't have too much of a problem with launching the Hail Mary instead of kicking the field goal.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Right back with more of your phone calls here on the Monday Drive.
6-7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Back to the phone. Who we got up first?
John.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, John.
Hey, I always want to thank my friends, Pat and Dan at the Sky Bar, and all your advertisers for your sponsorship there. But a couple things. On the long field goal, I don't even know if he still travels with the team. And I know he struggled last year, but didn't Towns-Magoo kick like a 62-yarder or something in high school?
Yeah, he did. I don't think he was with the team in Nashville, though, John. Yeah, somebody was texting me that during the game.
Well, did you hear Bo Wallace? I think it was Kyle Rush. Somebody said they talked to Bo Wallace after the game. He said that was Hugh Freeze's offense at Ole Miss. He said that right there was what we did at Ole Miss. I don't know what's happened, but that's the way we used to run the offense back then.
About 20 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the offense people thought they were getting when Auburn hired Hugh Freeze.
But we, you know, I think the expectation was you would modernize it and, you know, have it work in this era of college football. And apparently he just didn't do anything to change it or to make it better or to even make it, you know.
I know it's clearly about more than just the quarterback, but to me, figuring out how to adjust an offense to what the quarterback does well, which is clearly what Derek Nix was able to do, right, Bill?
Like
being able
no
to tailor an offense, because Ashton Daniels seemed so much more comfortable at Vanderbilt in this offense than he seemed at home against an inferior Kentucky team a week earlier. I mean, that to me is, I mean, credit to Derek Nix for doing what you're absolutely supposed to do, which is figuring out how to make your offense unlock your quarterback's ability.
I got one idea, and I'm not. It's not an original. It was in a movie back in the late 70s, early 80s. Bill, you probably saw it. Fast Break with Gabe Kaplan playing a basketball coach.
Fast Break. Okay.
Yeah.
Break's a good one.
I remember that.
He got paid because he was desperate for the job, and they paid him $1,000 a win. And I think you know you get like $25,000. They went undefeated. let's hire Durkin, give him $1 million a game, and, you know, hopefully make $12, $13, $14 million.
Incentive-laden deal for, you know, I mean, one would think that, I know the previous caller said DJ Durkin could be a candidate for head coaching jobs around the country. I wonder about that, just because of the way Auburn has kind of struggled. Like, a defensive coordinator from a team with kind of a middling win-loss record isn't the easiest sell to be your new head coach. I think there could be a market for DJ Durkin's services.
Oh, there definitely would be a market for him as a coordinator. I think
a robust
market. I think there could be, depending on what Auburn does here in the last couple of ball games. If Auburn beats Alabama.
Well, then that's a little bit different.
And he doesn't get the job, he may get another head coaching opportunity.
Right. Well, it's pretty amazing what he did in 4 or 5 days.
You're right about that.
I know a lot of people want to talk to y'all, so let's go with War Eagle, and thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it, John. Mike is up next. Hey, Mike.
Good afternoon. Good conversations today. Hey, I couldn't help but laugh about the previous caller who said, well, just line up and kick it and see how far it'll go. I wonder what Nick Saban would say.
They put that second back on the clock. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, exactly. I almost said, what could go wrong? Yeah. Right? What could go wrong?
Exactly. Hey, I don't know if it's true or not, but somewhere, I don't know if it was during a presser or if it was, some of the players just providing some of their comments. But there's the thought out there that there were times that Freeze would call a play that either hadn't been repped or hadn't been repped since camp or a long time ago. And I can tell you, as a former play caller, I screwed up more situations than I want to admit when I would pull something out of the back of my brain housing group, and it just takes one player out of the 11 to forget what it is, and they do the wrong thing. And, by the way, a lot of fans don't realize this, but if you make it through the first quarter and you're not hurting or dinged up or gassed, that's unusual. And so to be asking players to have to think about something that they haven't done for weeks or months and try to remember every aspect of it is huge.
Yeah.
I think the way we saw the offense move at the speed that they moved indicated they had a solid plan. They probably, and I'm just guessing, they probably had two plays called for every play. So very quickly, either quarterback or a quick glance to the sideline would get the call, stick with the play, go to the other play. So they could turn very, very quickly on that. And, you know,
the Malcolm screen on the first drive of the game, Auburn converts a 3rd and 19. And that seems like one of those examples of Ashton Daniels looking to at the line of scrimmage, deciding, okay, let's go to the other play.
Right, and wasn't it nice to see him look, and 1,001, 1,002, he's back over the ball, he's making the call, rather than 6 seconds, 8 seconds, 10 seconds, waiting for the call to come from the sideline. And so that kept the ball moving. Here's one other thing that I've thought of, you know, as we watch football on Sundays and Mondays and Thursdays, you always have at least one receiver who's a check down or within the 8 to 12 yard range. A tight end coming across the middle, a wide receiver, a back releasing into the flats. That's what was going on Saturday. We had guys that were picking up first downs we had the benefit of watching the yellow line on TV. We see that they're within a step or two of the first down marker. That was something we hadn't seen.
Jeremiah Cobb, who last year pretty much all he did was catch passes, finally got a chance to catch some passes on Saturday.
Great game, great improvement. I completely agree with DJ Durkin. We're not here for almost.
You're right.
One last thing. Statistically, Auburn has always done better with a defensive-minded coach. It's at least back through my long-tooth history, and I think it may be far beyond that. Having a strong defensive-minded coach who's all about punching the guy in the face, players are drawn to. Whether they're an offensive or defensive-minded coach, a player. And I think somebody like that is who you want. And then you have a solid play caller who's your OC. I think it's a solid package. Thanks, fellas.
That's what's worked. There's no question about that.
How much should that inform, and Brian, we've had people bring that up, because I'm not going to argue with the history of it, but How much should that inform your current coaching search in 25-26? The fact that, yes, a lot of your best seasons over the last 50 years have involved a defensive-minded head coach with a, you know, empowering an offensive coordinator to run that side of the ball.
And also you've had, what is it now, three straight offensive coaches that have struggled in certain areas. I mean, Gus had a nice run at times, but, you know. Yeah, I think that does inform
me. This will be the third offensive coach you fired in the 2020s.
Yeah. Right. But I don't think it needs to be like it cannot be an offensive coach no matter what. If Jeff Brohm wants to come to Auburn, are you really going to say no to that? I mean, the way he's running that program right now, I don't know. I guess he just lost a game, so he's not good
anymore.
Yeah,
well, but I mean, the only thing about – I mean, I like Jeff Brohm. I always have. Is that he's so entrenched and he's got so much family with him there.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying he's coming.
You know, on our staff.
Ole Miss.
Lane?
Yeah, Lane Kiffin wants to come here. Are you going to say no?
No.
So I agree, though.
That's Bill saying no, you're not going to say no.
Right.
That's my answer to no, you're not saying no to Lane.
But I do agree. I think I would prefer it if the choice was there, if the all things were close to equal. I think it makes a lot of sense because I think these offensive guys just cannot keep their hands out of the offense.
Guys who've been play callers.
Right.
Now, it's different. I mean, you got a situation like at Georgia Tech. Yeah. Brent Key hasn't been a play caller. He was an offensive line coach, so that's a little different.
Yeah, and when they start meddling in it, somebody else's offense, it just ruins the whole thing. It just really does.
Yeah, it does.
So, I'm tired of seeing it at Auburn, right? We've seen enough of that.
All right, let's get one more call before our final break of hour number one. Jeremy is next. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, bud.
Yeah, hey guys. Look, if we were hiring coaches based off of quick turnarounds, everybody would be clamoring for UCLA's coach right now.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate what we did offensively Saturday. But one game cannot make up your mind about who you should hire. You've got to go get whoever you think the best football coach is and let everything else fall into place.
Yeah, and if John Cohen feels DJ Durkin is the best candidate after, you know, the end of the regular season, then fine.
Yep. Yes. Defensively, offensively, everything that you said, you can't say anymore. We were unpredictable. You didn't know first down, second down, third down. Are we going to run it, throw it? Where are we going to line up? You know, we were bunch sets, spread sets, you know, multiple personnel groupings. That to me is just the biggest, how in the world, as Derek Yates, as offensive coordinator, I don't know how he hasn't resigned before now.
Mm.
That really is my question behind all of it.
Well, he was as offensive coordinator in title only, right? When it's offensive coordinator for a play-calling head coach, it's like, I don't know how much credit or blame you're necessarily going to get for the success of the offense. And then suddenly after 5 or 6 days, you get a chance to see what the guy can do as a play caller. And granted, you don't want to blow one game out of proportion, but what a turnaround, Jeremy.
Right. Well, we talked about it last week. We said Derek Nix is a guy who has been around a lot of football, a lot of different kinds of football. And you saw it all on Saturday, inside run games, outside run games, counters, inside traps, quarterback power, you name it, you saw it. And that's all anybody can do. You just can't be predictable. And we had just been entirely too predictable as far as things we were doing.
It's amazing to think, Jeremy, because a lot of coaching, a lot of situations, I mean, go back a couple of years ago, right? When Auburn makes the change from Harsin and Cadillac takes over, I think the offense was simplified, right? They boiled it down to the stuff they knew they could do well with Robbie Ashford, and at times it was especially for an SEC offense, kind of basic, but it was enough to win, the games that they won that year. I think the offense seemingly got more complicated over the last 5 days, as far as more varied, different looks, different responsibilities for the quarterback, and it led to breakthroughs that I didn't think we were going to see this year.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Now, there's something too simple. You can be simple as long as you're, again, as long as you're unpredictable, as long as you're not doing the exact same thing at the exact same times over and over again. That's the part where the charting that these defenses have on you. Like, if you're an 80% person and you're doing one thing on first down in certain conditions, like, that, they know that. And they will gear up their defenses to stop it.
Great stuff, Jeremy. We got to take a break. You want to hang on, or you want to wrap it up?
All
right, appreciate it, man.
Yeah, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us here on The Drive. Well, that music means we are out of time for hour number one. Yellowhammer, if you want to hang on, you can be up first in hour number two. Fun first hour again. We're having to cut out a little early today because of Auburn women's basketball taking on Wilmington?
UNC Greensboro.
Greensboro.
Got you wrong,
that's
UNC.
I was thinking W. It was one of those, one of those UNC dash.
One of the several UNCs. Yeah, Greensboro's in town.
Greensboro.
Tonight at Neville Arena.
6 o'clock tip. All right, so we'll be back with our shortened version of hour number two. Come on in and join us.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a cold. It's not just chilly. It is a cold Monday. It's going to be even colder tonight. Be aware of that. Temperatures expected to get into the 20s tonight.
A little early for the holiday music, although, I don't know, maybe we're about to flip the switch and turn one of our stations over. I don't know. I'm sure it's happening.
Any day.
Should happen soon. But, baby, it's cold outside,
yes,
Bill.
Indeed.
What do you think?
Yes, I mean, it is.
Try to stay warm, especially if you're headed to women's basketball tonight at Neville. Auburn welcoming in the Spartans of UNC Greensboro for a home game.
And with the ball games all being on ESPN 106.7 this year, we'll be off a little early, so we only have about 35 more minutes that we'll be with you here on the Monday Drive. So with that said, let's get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Yellowhammer has been hanging on since hour number one. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Well, I just got a quick thought. Vanderbilt is a smart in the game, and we, on the other hand, had like five times as many penalties or even more than that.
You may be surprised that Vandy and Auburn were the bottom two SEC teams in penalties going in, but Vandy somehow managed to escape with about a third of their normal
3 for 21 yards. Amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
If we'd have just done half as many penalties, we'd probably won the game.
Or if Vandy had been called for nearly as many as they normally are, Auburn might have won the game.
Yeah.
But they didn't. I mean, Auburn has managed to do whatever it takes to keep these games close, but not quite get over the top.
Just a little closer would be nice, as in the other way around.
Well, I feel pretty good, though, if the offense can – I mean, I don't expect them to go out and put up 560 yards against Alabama or anything like that, but if the offense can move the ball and score with more efficiency than they did before the Vandy game, they've got a shot.
Well, we were always just running the wrong play calling for the personnel we had, and I think they kind of turned the mix around a little bit. We've got to compensate for every offensive coordinator has to compensate for the weaknesses as well as build around the strengths, and I don't think we compensated around the strengths very well. The weaknesses, we didn't concentrate around the weaknesses.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, we'll pull out. Well, we don't have to say you wait till next year. We have to wait a couple more games, but I feel like we should have a much better offensive line next year, and that might have been our weak point.
That's a spot. We appreciate the phone call, Yellowhammer. I mean, that's a spot, Brian, where, like, even though I think, you know, seeing some...
Man, I have no idea what you're going to have next year, period.
I mean, I think Chaplin has a year of eligibility available. Isn't that right? And then Connor Liu, of course, is a junior. But, like, I don't... I mean, that feels like it's a... That's, I mean, what's... Just like we were saying... it's fair when Auburn's interviewing coaches to ask, you know, what's your plan to keep Cam Coleman? I think what's your plan for the Auburn offensive line is a pretty fair question, because right now you've got some young players who haven't gotten into the game very much.
I mean, they haven't got a look. And how can you evaluate?
And a bunch of seniors that are playing their last year of college football all over that all over the starting lineup.
334-321-1390. Mitch is up next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. You know, I'm a history buff, so I got to say happy birthday to the USMC today. 250 years ago, they were established. And then a couple milestones, at least to me, happened yesterday. You had the Berlin Wall come down in 89.
Nice.
And then I didn't realize this, but it was on my calendar. The Edmund Fitzgerald went down in Lake Superior 50 years ago yesterday.
It did.
Yeah. I hope I didn't mess up your Monday music.
Well,
you never will. That's two of the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, you hope you
got on Mitch to just mess up the Monday music.
Oh, boy.
That's all right. I mean, that was.
I thought it was 50 years ago today.
It is 50 years ago today.
Yeah, it's November 10th, I believe.
Oh, is it today? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It is.
I had it on the 9th. Okay. Well, okay. Thanks for the correction there. I'll update my calendar. But I don't know. Maybe Brian does. But do you guys watch any Formula One racing?
I have not got into it.
Nope.
Some of my children have, but I haven't.
Well, I mean, all the other racing series are over with, but yesterday they were racing in Brazil, and the reigning world champion, Max Verstappen, started in the pits. I think he started 18th, and with about 10 laps to go, he was in third place, you know, going to make the podium, and he's behind a 19-year-old named Kimi Antonelli, I think, drives for Mercedes, okay? He held him off for 10 laps. Now, can you imagine being a 19-year-old in a Formula One car and a four-time world champion on your butt?
No, honestly, I can't.
Well, anyway, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever gotten a ride in, like, a NASCAR or any kind of, you know, race car. I have. And these cars have grip like you would not believe.
Yeah.
But anyway, I looked up some stuff now. A Formula One car costs anywhere from $12 to $20 million. Okay, the engine costs about $10 million. The steering wheel costs $50,000. I mean, these cars are like incredible. I can't imagine the grip and I mean the G forces I've seen that they'll show on the telecast are up there also. I mean, I've had a couple of F-16 rides where we got up to about 8 or 9 Gs, and you talk about, you know, about to pass out. These guys are hitting, you know, speeds well over 200 miles an hour in straightaways, and then they have to brake, they have to gear down or brake down to, 70, 80 miles an hour, take turns. So it's just, I just think it's incredible, but I was just really impressed by this 19-year-old.
That's really, really impressive stuff, Mitch. Appreciate the phone call. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Brought to you by our friends at Skybar. Who's next?
Philly Fanatic,
you got any Formula One?
Oh, man. Yeah, if you please talk about something we can contribute to.
Okay. Bill, did you see the Auburn High baby Tigers on Friday versus
I watched
this
yes,
one.
I watched a good game. Bit of it there on Alabama Public TV.
Philly,
yes.
They were down 20
Jacob.
Down 21-0
in the first
to a team that had beaten them earlier this year.
Beat them handily. I mean, earlier this year.
And I mean the next scoring update I got was 38-34, and I go, ooh, I better tune in and watch the rest of this. Yeah. And it was just a 52-41, barrage.
42-41, unbelievable, yeah.
Road game at Daphne Friday night. You can catch that on Wings 94.3.
Mm-hmm. I really liked their quarterback. He threw some really nice passes. And that running back, King, he wasn't very tall, but boy, he was flat. He was getting all kinds of yards.
Yeah, I mean, the offense was just really clicking Friday night. No question about it.
Okay.
Yeah, sort of an indication of the way the weekend went. I mean, offensively.
Yeah, that's right. Two really good Auburn teams this week. So why would you not think Daniels would sit out Mercer and come back? Because let's say he doesn't. Where is he going to go after that? USFL? I mean, he's not good enough to play in the NFL. Seems to me if he comes back, he'll probably get a $1 million NIL.
He would get paid, well, yes. I think the one thing with him is he's already a Stanford graduate, so he's probably got some pretty good options if he's just done playing
probably
football.
Probably does, but if he wants to play right. if he wants to play football next year, his best opportunity probably would be to only play one more game and
the,
come back.
And the plan was, as Bill mentioned earlier, the plan was for him to redshirt this year and be part of the quarterback room next year too. So, see, you know, he seems to be open to playing another season of college football. And yeah, I think that's, you know, again, do you just anoint him as the guy and sort of make plans?
Nah, I'd say you're number one heading in, but there's going to be competition.
We've seen what anointing somebody can do.
You know, he had a couple of super games at Stanford as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, he needs to prove he can do it consistently. Right. But we've seen now he can do it. Yeah. He can do it in this league.
Once you own a skill, once you demonstrate you can do something, you are always. I mean, you're always capable of doing that thing in theory because you've demonstrated it in the past.
So, would the Eagles play Packers? Do they play in the frozen tundra? What's going to be the temperature there? -10.
Supposed to be cold tonight, and that's that's the team that's you know, the Packers ownership, one of the louder about getting rid of the push, Philly, against the team that sort of mastered it. So, and you know, and maybe a playoff matchup coming up down the line too. But that's should be a good one on Monday Night Football if you get ESPN.
So my muse has got to be Journey. And I'm not. Don't stop believing. You know, students like that. But for me, Faithfully is what I.
That's a good one.
The ballads of the '80s.
Stone in Love.
Power ballads.
Stone
there
in
you
Love
go.
Is a great.
Separate Ways is my Journey move.
It's not going to be as cold tonight there as it is here.
What?
29. It says 29 degrees. Well, lower 20 by game's end. Ooh. So that's about what it's going to be here. So it's not going to be that much colder there than it is here.
Any way you want it. Good Journey song?
Oh, great one.
Oh, there is so many songs. They could fill up a whole stadium with it.
City by Lights is my favorite.
Lights. City by the Bay?
Oh, yeah.
Who's Crying Now? Who's Crying Now is a really good one.
Yeah.
Only the Young. I mean, there's got so many.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, Sherry is Steve Perry solo joint, right? That's a good song, too, though.
Yeah. Good hearing from you, Philly.
All right. Eagle.
We'll get one more before we get to our first break, and I think it's NASCAR Tex.
Yeah. The next one I watch would be my first.
Wheel in the Sky?
I thought it was kind of funny.
Wheel in the Sky. Yes.
So, sorry. I've ridden with my wife before. I'm assuming it's a lot like riding in a NASCAR. So, anyway, it's really interesting. I called to tell a story about what happened at church on Sunday. Everybody knows I live in Baton Rouge, and we went to church and looking around, and I noticed something that was completely different than the normal Sunday after a Saturday in Baton Rouge, and one of the ushers came up to me and goes, "You know what I like about Auburn fans?" And I said, "No, I have no idea." He goes, "They wear their colors no matter what happens in the game."
Yeah.
But you know what LSU fans do? There was no purple and orange with 1,500 people.
You know, the confidence seemed so high that they were going to – this is going to light their offense on fire, and they were going to come out, and you're going to see the LSU that people thought they were going to see in the preseason. It's like that offense wound up in Nashville instead of in Tuscaloosa.
So it was just interesting to me for that to be noticed, and I just put on what I normally did, an Auburn shirt.
Right.
So I just it just kind of caught me a little bit off guard. But also notice more of an upbeat call in this Monday.
I think so. Yeah.
I think people have said. I mean, even during the losing streak, Tex. I think Bill mentioned if you got the sense offensive progress was actually happening, not that you were close to it, but you actually saw it. I think the losing would have been a little bit easier to swallow. Maybe not. I mean, it's still tough to lose. But the thought that the offense isn't adrift?
No, I think now
and hopeless?
Now you feel like, look, the defense you know can play better than they did Saturday. But you didn't know if the offense could compete and actually give you a chance to really win a ball game. And now you feel like, they do.
I also feel good, Tex, and I think this is something that might strike a chord with you, Tex, that I feel good that in a month where, look, it's understandable to be disappointed that Auburn is playing for pride again in November. They've been playing for pride probably too many Novembers recently. But if that's what you're playing for, the fact that they showed that kind of backbone and that kind of spirit on Saturday with other schools surrendering unconditionally on the football field in the SEC after making coaching changes. I think that's
golly,
that's
Florida. Oh man!
I mean, you talk about take the money and run, right? Like that's not a Journey song, but it might as well be with what Florida did on Saturday. Like that's I mean, I think to see it speaks to some of the guys that they brought in here, and the fact that they're willing to still go out there and play as hard as they did,
and the leadership that they fall under now. It was interesting. I've watched the post game press conference and the post game locker room scene multiple times. To see the reaction of the young men and of DJ Durkin, I don't know if he's the right guy to be the head coach or not, but that guy's a leader. And sometimes you just need somebody to lead you. And Pat Dye never called any offensive plays, he was a leader. When he spoke, people listened. I think he deserves serious at least.
Oh, he definitely deserves serious consideration. And Brian, correct. I haven't had a chance to watch it, but I saw somebody on your board posted a little bit of DJ Durkin at the Monday Morning Quarterback Club in Birmingham. Have you had a chance to see that?
No, I have not.
Because reading a couple of the comments, apparently in that, DJ Durkin talked about what is being built and how he wants to be a part of what is being built at Auburn long term. Right. So, yeah,
does that include his house that he's building in Auburn?
Maybe. I mean, I've heard multiple people, and I don't know DJ Durkin personally, but I've heard people that I believe do know him pretty well feel like he and his family are very, very happy being in Auburn.
Just one last thing, and I say this all the time about coaches. I look at coaches, and the first question I ask is, would I let my son play for that guy? I would let my son and my son's son and my son's son's son play for that guy. I think he's a leader. So either way, he needs to be on the staff.
That would be nice.
Because he's going to help change things back to the normal way. All right, guys, I appreciate it.
Thanks. All right, Tex. We need to get to our first break. Dan, hang on. You're up when we come back.
Been hard to argue DJ Durkin's been part of the problem for the last year and a half or so. Question of how big of a role does he need to have in the solution, right? Like where does he factor into to the next phase is up for debate.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. More of your phone calls as we head to Auburn women's basketball at around 5:40 or so is when we'll get out of here. So come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
At affordable comfort.
Find at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, and let's head back to The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Dan is next. Hey, Dan.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. Yeah, you know, it was great to see, but it was frustrating to watch how our offense could have been doing the whole entire year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Derek Nix just took kind of what he learned from Lane, because Lane always goes super fast, and it keeps the defense in base defense, so they can't do all these exotic blitzes. And when he was there, you know, we would call play, then we'd look to the sideline, and then we'd change the play. And the clock's running down, and the defense shows one look, and then they do a totally different thing, and it becomes a disaster. It just shows if you run the offense correctly, it can be a great offense. But unfortunately, the way we ran it was terrible for the other eight games.
Yeah, sadly.
So,
I mean, just to see the difference in Ashton from Kentucky to what you saw Saturday, right? Like when it looked like you had an offense that was hopeless on multiple drives against Kentucky. You couldn't run, you couldn't throw short, you couldn't throw deep. And then to see that with a new play caller, it is reminiscent of seeing the breakthrough from like 03 to 04, right? When it's like you saw all these guys in 03.
A lot of the same talent. Yep.
And these guys can't play. And then a different play caller says, oh, yes, they can. A little bit of that on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is the decision to say, hey, we have two great receivers. Let's throw them the ball. you know, when you sit there and go, oh, we got somebody over top, so we can't go to that guy. We just completely let the defense take our best player out of the game, our best two players out of the game, and just, you know, it's like we were dictating, like, what we wanted to do, not what the defense was trying to force us to do.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like it just makes me mad. Like,
You can't, yeah, you can't help it to think that. I mean, it's like, get the ball to the guys that can make the plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you got a 300-yard passer, a 100-yard rusher, 200-yard receivers who both had over 10 catches, and that's a first for Auburn. And that talent's
exactly
been there all year.
All year.
Yeah, that's right.
And you only had, I mean, after Oklahoma.
Jeremiah Cobb, we were talking about this, yeah. Brian, before Stephen Pearl's press conference today. Just the thought of Jeremiah Cobb having 12 total carries against Texas A&M and Oklahoma.
Yeah. And you had downfield attempts against Oklahoma, but even after that, it felt like you stopped doing that for several weeks to the point where you didn't have any against Kentucky. Yeah. And it's like with these receivers, you weren't attempting downfield shots. And with Cam Coleman, a guy who, I mean, it's like throwing it up to Shaq, right? Like when you, I mean, he's capable.
It's like throwing it to, what's the Fantastic Four? I mean,
Mr. Fantastic.
Yes.
Plastic Man, if you
That's
will.
That's exactly
Stretch
right.
Armstrong.
I mean, it's
yeah.
like just anywhere, it's like somehow that arm's going to get out there and catch the ball.
Yeah. All right. Well, hope for the best in the future. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Appreciate it, Dan. 334-321-1390.
Yeah, I mean it's there are a lot of exciting young players on this team that you hope to keep in the fold next season. Cam Coleman is a different level of like the priority of keeping Cam Coleman around for his third and what will almost assuredly be final year of college football next year. I mean, you've known all along what this guy can do and you know, I think you thought you'd see more games like Saturday, but when you see a game like Saturday, I mean, look, the catch he makes on the sideline to get his foot, the catch that gets overturned.
Yes, the incompletion, which was overturned correctly into a catch.
Yeah, okay. Right.
When you had to realize, oh, that blue is his foot. Because the white, you saw the white of the feet of the defender who was behind him. They were both out of bounds.
Yep.
And his foot, as he is further out of bounds, his foot is still in bounds.
Okay, for most Auburn receivers, that would be by far the greatest catch of your career, right? And for Cam Coleman, it was in the top three
of that game.
Of that game on Saturday, like I mean, it was one of several.
Unbelievable.
I don't know, and I believe the one to make it
the touchdown.
I believe the touchdown before
where he reaches around.
Yes, yeah. The touchdown where it looks like the ball goes through the defender.
Yeah,
where it's like a, you know, like Madden glitched. Right, like, yeah, the ball was, yeah, Drew's
yeah,
nodding his head.
As I
Drew
saw
knows.
It, it's like, well, that's incomplete because I thought it hit the receiver.
No, he catches it, and like, I think that was number two on SportsCenter for the day on Saturday, and the reason it wasn't number one is because
of the Indiana.
The catch to give Indiana the lead is going to be on highlight reels forever, but Cam Coleman, I mean, just a display. Right, like just a highlight reel of catches from Saturday that show you how important he is.
But yeah, Dan's exactly right. That's why it's so frustrating when you think of the possibilities that were wasted this year.
I know. I mean, Auburn should already have a winning record. They should be in the discussion for the playoffs.
They
right
should
now.
Be. That's they what absolutely should, that's what
should
be.
Second should year in a row. And it was, you know, that first year Hugh Freeze was the coach, you didn't necessarily think, okay, Auburn's giving these games away. I mean, I guess there is the 23 Iron Bowl. But, like, there are games where it's like Auburn, oh, man. They're
away to the last play.
That's what I mean. But in 23, I don't think it was more about, hey, this team's competitive, wait until they get better. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
2 years in a row where it's felt like you're good enough to win these games. And you're getting in your own way. Yeah. You're tripping over your own feet. You're slipping on the banana peel you threw on the ground.
You didn't execute again. Oh, I can't believe it.
I want to get to something that we've sort of
touched. You pulled the football away right before you kicked it.
Not again. How could that happen again?
Well, yeah. But something we've touched on a couple of times sort of tried to make this point with Doug earlier today, but I think it's something that people need to realize as we head toward the end of the season and toward the decision for the next head coach, that yes, roster retention is critical, but I don't think it's as black and white as some people feel, that DJ Durkin stays, roster stays. DJ Durkin goes, roster goes.
No.
I think, like I said a while ago, I think Auburn has the resources. They've got the financial resources.
And they've got more than most because they moved that game to Atlanta.
Absolutely,
I know people are mad about it, but that's giving them a leg up.
And whoever the next head coach, the permanent head coach is, be it DJ Durkin or anyone, if it is someone who can sell his players and then have the financial resources to back it up, I think there's a chance to retain a significant portion of this roster.
I want to add to that, and this could blow up in my face if the roster disintegrates, but I think the fact that Hugh Freeze emphasized recruiting locally more than Harsin did.
I think that
could help you maintain the fact that a lot of these guys are playing for their hometown school or what is the closest big time school to their hometowns. You know, when you think about Malik or Cam Coleman, right? Like among others, Omar Mabson. Like some of your exciting
first-year kids.
Yeah, a lot of your exciting first and second year guys are guys that are, or even Georgia players from relatively nearby. You know, it's something that could help keep your roster together in a way that if this roster was made up of players from all over the country, and you had to task the new coach with keeping them together. Some of those guys might get homesick. And some of those guys might decide, hey, this isn't what I signed up for, and I'm going to go play somewhere a little closer to home. These guys might decide to do that anyway, but they're already closer to home. Like, they're already playing for – you already seemingly have that leg up if you're trying to get them back.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. A quick segment when we come back. We'll get more details on Brian's Monday musings when we come back to wrap things up here on the Monday Drive.
Of all the things one can list as to what makes our country a beacon of freedom to the world, first on the list should be those who have worn and wear the uniform of our armed services. This is Sheriff Jay Jones with an offer of continued respect and support of the men and women.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes here as we have Auburn women's basketball coming up in just a few minutes. I think we need to start when Mitch calls in. We'll just call him Spoiler.
Yeah.
I mean, it would work better if you were a NASCAR guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that would really make it double, because he has nailed a couple of Brian's Monday
really
musings.
Yep.
Let's talk about what, obviously, I would guess the football musings are about the positives from Saturday?
I had to shred the former coach a little bit.
Oh, okay. Well, again, deservedly so.
Yeah, but I definitely talked about the incredible job Derek Nix did. 6 days between him being told, you're in charge, you're calling the plays, plays.
And doing it.
And executing on the field.
Yeah.
I just thought that was incredible by him. And then Ashton Daniels, who's, had a great attitude, worked his tail off.
Really has.
Hardly played at all, and then suddenly he's thrown to the spotlight now and goes out there and plays the game of his life and one of the best games that an Auburn quarterback has played in its history.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think those two guys need to be recognized a little bit there. And then our musical journey was 50 years ago. It was the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and y'all can, of course, go a little bit farther, who wrote the song and sang the song. And
yeah, Gordon Lightfoot, who had, he'd been a pretty popular folk singer and on the pop charts for a few years. I guess, was it around 70 or so that If You Could Read My Mind?
Yes.
Was his first one?
Almost all of them in the 70s.
Yeah.
From Canada, if people didn't know that.
Yes, he was.
And had several other big hits. Let's see how many y'all can name. Had one number one. We know
Sundown.
That one. Sundown, yep. Sundown, You Better Take Care. Yeah, there you go. I see if you can name some other hits.
Well, I can. I can do
it. Yeah, Bill knows all of them.
Highway.
Yeah, another one.
I've heard Sundown, and I think I've probably heard the Read My Mind one.
If you could
read my mind.
Yeah, you definitely heard it.
But the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald was the,
And it was also a great, as a DJ back then, it was a great bathroom song.
Because
it's 5 minutes, 57 seconds long.
Yeah. And there weren't many songs that long
that you could put on and take a break.
That's right.
Yeah.
And of course was referenced on a Seinfeld episode. A couple of I think that's the last one of the last seasons when George is competing with a Andrea Doria survivor.
They came up with the craziest. Yeah. I just wonder where that came from.
And it's a
personal story.
A lot of that stuff had to compete with. A lot of that stuff came from the writers' room. Yeah. And I wonder if somebody found themselves in a bake off for an apartment with a tragedy survivor, and they had to come up with a story of their own.
Yeah. Yeah, but a terrific career. Passed away, I think, in 2013. One thing I thought that was compelling was every year the bell at Mariners Church would ring 29 times in honor of the lives lost.
Uh-huh.
And then on May 1st, 2023. So I'm sorry, not 2013, 2023. When he passed away, it rang 30 times for the.
They added him to the 29 lives lost.
It's
a great story. I mean, he was a storytelling singer writer. So I mean, it's he's very. I know he tried to stick really to the facts.
He did. In fact, changed his lyrics around a little bit after the song was originally published and put out on a record, as he found out more facts about the wreck.
Brian, it's always great having you in. I mean, let everybody know. I mean, open week, but there's still plenty going on.
Yes, and we will have all the coverage possible on the coaching search. If anything pops up, we'll have that immediately on our site, on our message boards. Basketball tomorrow night, baseball wrapping up fall ball this week. Have more of that and all that more, auburnsports.com. Follow me on Twitter, /X at BMATAU.
That is great. Our thanks to Brian coming in. We should be joined by, let's see, I don't know. We got ball game tomorrow night, so maybe we'll get Andy from over there at the arena. Don't forget, Auburn women's basketball coming up next, though. We're back with you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.